almost a year. Pause. By his own, Jesus will speak of wise bridesmaids and foolish ones. He will speak of wise ones on the rock and foolish ones on the sand. Well-known contrasts in his parables. And there will be foolish disciples on the road to Emmaus. And King Herod famously referred to as that fox. Did Jesus live up to his own teaching on the Sermon on the Mount, when he said, "What I say unto you"? That fox. It's a pretty small contribution to the history of insults. I have here a book of 300 pages long of Shakespeare's insults, which I bought for 99 pence in Cockington. Just a touch from A Midsummer Night's Dream. "Get you gone, you dwarf, you minimus, of kindred not grass made, you bead, you acorn." Tell them that nowadays, do they? Not long ago, just a few days, I went to the village shop in Wolverhampton to fetch the newspapers, and I stood outside in the queue. And the whole place was festooned with England flags. And apparently, late at night, the night before, the Keeble family, who have distant relations with our people, have been outside their shop blowing balls and celebrating victory in football over Germany. Anyway, it was 9 a.m. and people were returning from dropping their children off at primary school, and I listened to a group of well-spoken and rather scruffy dressed young adults as they passed the shop on their way home. "Of course, pure tribalism," said the bearded one. "It just shows what empty lives they have. Empty lives, empty-headed, mild in comparison with some of Shakespeare's insults, but nevertheless wry, all the same. What terrible fate will await that man recalling the people's wrath or empty headed. But how often in the university is someone called empty headed or a fool? And amongst the citizens of Oxford, there is an insult which is quite frequently used. Calling someone academic in the town is no compliment, believe me. In the light of the gospel, then, we might be truly afraid to even open our mouths in ordinary conversation for fear of what judgment might fall on us. And yet, at the end of St. Matthew's gospel, our Lord will embark on the sevenfold indictment of the scribes and the Pharisees. How do we make sense of this? What is the fate of Shakespeare? Is he a bad role model who deserves to be cancelled by Christians? From Henry VI, Part 2. "He can speak French, therefore he is a traitor." And just as we even had a bit, "He speaks Latin." That's too rude. The origin of the word rock apparently lies in spitting. It is contempt. Disagree, as he did, and strongly, but we're not to hold himself in his passion was spat on. Matthew, Mark, and Luke make that clear. He was spat on. His own spit, Jesus' spit, was only used to heal the blind and the dumb. And in our culture today, pouring contempt on others is commonplace. Not only people with flags outside their house, but so often anyone who is different. You don't look like me. You don't sound like me. You don't think like me. Therefore, I hold you in contempt. I have no part in you. And this contempt may be loudly voiced by people walking home past the bread shop, but it may also be hidden. St. Albert of Rivera says this in a sermon on the Annunciation. For the human heart is like a vessel filled with honey or poison. As long as the vessel is closed, no one knows what is contained within it. If, however, someone takes off the lid, immediately what is hidden within is known by its odor. Therefore, brothers, as long as a monk is in silence, as long as no one says anything to him, or gives him order, or opportunity for him to show something of his inner self, it is as if that vessel is closed. What is hidden inside is not known. Let him come to some chapter meeting, or let him be ordered to do something that is possibly difficult, or let him be corrected for some exterior key. Then the vessel is opened. Then one smells the good or bad odor. If he is then made angry, gives himself up to slandering and murmuring, and also when he has the opportunity, he gives himself over to perfumery, laughter, similar frivolities. He does not offer a good odor to his brothers. He does not have fraternal charity in his vessel. In the Christian life, hail as I just before said, Christ was conceived in the flesh only once. Christ was conceived in the flesh only once. But, he says, he is conceived spiritually every day. But he cannot be conceived in a vessel which lacks paternal charity. In a vessel like the monk who gives off a bad odor. In the collect today, we ask that God will pour into our hearts such love towards him. Now, you've probably heard me say before that the word pour is so generous. It's not spooning out or rationing in any way, but pouring the love of God. Think custard, cream, wine. Generously pour, if that will help. Think of the alabaster jar full of costly ointment which the woman poured over Jesus before his passion. So it is that we ask for love to be poured into our hearts. And at the end of Mass, we will say the Angelus and remind ourselves how Christ was conceived in the flesh. But that prayer is asking for him to be conceived in us today, for him to be conceived in us today. The Eucharist will have made us ready to be the place where he can be conceived, vessels free from contempt, full of fraternal charity, ready for grace to pour. pray in that wonderful final collect, the collect of the Annunciation, pour thy grace into our hearts. The word which was made flesh and dwelt amongst us now comes to dwell amongst us, to dwell now amongst us.